remember back to our activities of right, Apulian Connection meeting, and a special word of welcome to the Director General, Ubabusi Vuwe Mbogwane, and Tip from the Department of Public Works. I see that you brought a very impressive team here that is going to be able to give us all the answers if we've got too many questions. And also to our guests from various organizations who are a permanent feature of this committee whenever we meet the faces that you see all the time. And also to thank the committee secretariat and the research unit, our engineer, Ms. Akona Busakwe, for always being on top of the situation and the ball here. And Ms. Sinead Stephanie, our researcher, for always providing the necessary information that we need to empower us from time to time to deal with the issues. So welcome once more. Sasa, it's a pleasure to see you again back here. You look very worried.
No,
I'm
too.
Oh, okay. You see, I know why you worry, and I know why you got flu. We've got two apologies from Mr. Magama and Mr. Manana. Apparently, there's something new that I've learned. I'm told now that during committee week, if we've got a committee week like this one, we meet on a Wednesday as the portfolio committee and not on a Tuesday. So there is a clash, there is international relations that is meeting today. And so we'll live with that. And we also had an apology from Comrade Danny Kekana, who's going to another meeting at 10 o'clock. We have to sort out these matters so that our meetings don't clash at all. DG, I think I must give straight to you to take us through the issues of the annual report. Let me just make this announcement quickly. We are going to continue our meeting this afternoon. There is no plenary today. So there are reports that we've got to consider, the BRRR reports. We try to squeeze these things into some resolution today because we couldn't deal with the reports last week before we received the report from the Department of Public Works. So we're going to break at lunchtime. I'm told that Parliament refused to provide lunch. During lunchtime, the department will take their group to their braai, wherever they have their lunch. And you go to your restaurant to have your lunch. We meet again at 2 o'clock, same venue, at the same venue, to deal with the, not with the department, we will get finished with it. After lunch, you go. And then we continue with our own meeting. But those who want to be observers can remain. We're not chasing away. All I'm saying that is that by lunchtime we have finished. Once more, welcome. In terms of Earth agenda, we're going to take a presentation and then do some deliberation there. Over to you, DJ.
Honorable Chair and honorable members of Parliament, thank you very much and thank you for the opportunity, Chair. We have presented or rather prepared a very brief presentation, Chair, so that we are able to engage and take questions. Our outline, Chair, for the presentation is that we'll briefly cover in a few slides the overview to the annual report as was provided by the Minister, and then the different branch heads will cover very briefly the areas and feedback within their specific areas, and after which, Chair, we will then go into the final report with the CFO, and in the final report the focus will be on the qualification. What are the issues that have led to the qualification? How have what is the difference between those issues this year and in the previous years, but more importantly, what is it that the department is currently doing around some of the issues, what is the progress, what are the challenges, and Chair, there is some consistency in terms of what happened last year and what is happening this year. And when we get to that, to that part of the presentation, I will give a brief overview around some of the key areas. Just in terms of the overview, Chair and honourable members, the planning for the previous year, which ended on the 1st of March 2010, were really guided by a number of government policy priorities, which include the issue of poverty alleviation and addressing unemployment, building of state's capacity to implement programs and policies of government, investment in productive infrastructure, as well as implementation of projects that are priority to government. It became then important for the department to pay attention to a number of programs which the department adopted as its flagship programs. One was the upscaling of the Expanded Public Works Program. Chair, with your permission, I'd like to take this opportunity to just mention the fact that last week we had what I believe was a very successful first EPWP summit with all of the municipalities at the ICC in Durban. We issued invitations to all of the 283 odd municipalities, and we had delegates of about 780 that attended. And our feedback to date is that the municipalities were very happy with how we outlined the EPWP program in terms of what is our responsibility as the Department of Public Works, as the lead and coordinator of EPWP, and what is our role in supporting them so that they can start creating projects and take on the incentives so that we are able to alleviate poverty and unemployment in our country. The second issue, Chair, is the issue of the enhancement of the immovable asset register, and I'm hoping that's not what is making DPG Sasa Subban sick. We also focused on the issue of the energy efficiency, the implementation of GIAMA, dolomite management, and the issue of land ports of entry. In terms of the public entities that report to the Minister of Public Works, the IDD continued to be involved in the construction of infrastructure on behalf of government. In the last portfolio committee meeting, Chair, you would be reminded that we mentioned our efforts of working with Treasury to make sure that IDT is recapitalized so that it can continue on its good work. And we're happy to say that recapitalization seems to be in progress and coming out quite well. The CIDB, focusing on the National Contractor Development Program and the establishment of contractor conduct centers in all the provinces, the issues of the gradings of different contractors continue to be an issue that is continuously being raised, and there are efforts to try and resolve that. And there is a plan in VISO for CIDB with all the contractors as a step of moving forward around those issues to make sure that we're able to bring as many of the contractors coming from previously disadvantaged backgrounds and transform the sector and assist them in transforming the sector. The Council for CBE, Council for Built Environment, the issues that continue to nag the council and the related professional councils under it is the issue of the skills pipeline in the built environment. Again, Chair, I'm happy to say that we've had a very important meeting between ourselves, the CBE and EXA, and around the model of assisting the professions in bringing in engineers and young built environment professionals from school to universities, and ultimately making sure that they are able to qualify and get registered. There are challenges. We are working on it to make sure that at the end of the day we are able as the department to fast track the transformation of the sector and bringing in of black professionals into that environment. It is critical for the survival of that profession within our country. And finally, Chair, Agreement South Africa, the issue of fit for purpose certificate for non-standardized products, and increasing the participation in the innovation hub. And really the view here is to market alternative building materials for human settlements. We have been fortunate to go at Romanskal to see a facility wherein they are using alternative building materials for the creation of houses. And the issue, nevertheless, is still a cost issue to say how do we use these alternative building materials to assist in, for example, in the development of human settlements. Some of the challenges faced, the issue of the education of tenants to prevent fraud and corruption remains a big issue, Chair. It remains a big issue because it is an issue that has got a number of sides to it. One side being the internal controls, the processes, the policies and procedures. The other side is just the issue of behavior, particularly around the disclosure of confidential information by officials to suppliers, to tenders, and et cetera, et cetera. We continue to be plagued by issues of people knowing exactly what was the outcome of adjudication committees before those adjudication committees have finalized on the matters. And these are real issues that are very difficult to police and very difficult to have controls around, because it has to do with the issues of integrity of individuals. But we'll continue our efforts as much as possible to make sure that at least from a policy and procedures point of view, we're able to have people signing non-disclosure agreements, et cetera, et cetera, so that as they deliberate on the issues, they are able to, we're able at least to seek to make sure that they apply their minds independently and objectively in the adjudication of these tenders. Risk management will continue to be a huge challenge, Chair. And finally, relating to also risk management is the whole issue of risk management and the fast-tracking of the vesting process that remains a challenge. It was mentioned as well last week in the APWP summit that the web-based reporting remains an issue, and we are looking at systems to make sure that we're able to resolve that issue as soon as possible. Chair, with that brief overview, I would like to really hand over to the members of the EXCO to brief the committee on their programs. Thank you.
Let's note that this is your first annual report that you are presenting, and thanks very much. You handled it years ago, you dealt with the previous ones before. Well done.
Thank you, Chair. Honorable members, I'm going to take you through performance under the branch finance and supply chain. One of the targets that we had set ourselves for the year under review was clearing of all the AG queries. We focused mostly on the issues that led to the qualification and the assets report in the previous financial year. Chair, on the movable assets, as reported previously, that we could not produce a credible asset register, and one of the reasons cited was the flooding that had happened at one of our offices in Pretoria. Chair, we have managed to overcome that problem. We've cleared the issues. We've compiled an asset register, done our verification, and it is evidenced by the fact that in our new audit report, we don't have any issue on movable assets. The weaknesses in internal control, one of the areas that we focused on was the 30-day payment, where it was mentioned that we pay our contractors very late. As one of the initiatives to try and speed up payments, we implemented a operation reaffirmer to fast track the payments. And although the query, the finding is still there in our audit report, we have really moved significantly in terms of expediting the old payments and trying to set up systems to ensure that we can track the invoices. I think the current challenge is the fact that the transversal systems that we are using, Logit, we don't have a creditors module that can clearly give us a sense of the invoices that we receive. But up. We've done quite extensive reconciliations on the old balances. With the implementation of the PMTE, particularly in the early year 2006-2007, the migration was not done properly where there could be proper audit trail on some of the transactions. But we have since reconciled most of the accounts. 90% of them are reconciled. Those that are not properly reconciled is because there are differences that still have to be resolved. And we've gone further to engage client departments after those reconciliations were done to try and collect whatever amounts that were still outstanding. We are not able to collect all the outstanding balances simply because with the cash basis of accounting, departments would have paid back whatever they did not spend to National Treasury. And because everything was done on a manual basis, there would be disputes in terms of the invoices that were billed to the client department. If you look at our revenue recoverable in the year under review, we've managed to collect 98%. That shows that we have systems in place currently. What we are trying to address is the backlog. The transactions that happened during the first few years of implementation of the PMTE. One of the targets that we had set ourselves was the sourcing of funds. With the reprioritization that we implemented in the department and the austerity measures, we managed to reprioritize funds to at least augment our compensation budget for new posts.
The second issue, Chair, is internal in audit and investigation services, as well as monitoring and evaluation. The critical around internal audit and investigation services is the issue of awareness on fraud prevention. Chair, this remains a very important issue. As members are aware that the SIU is currently within the department and doing investigations, we are hoping that the mere presence of the SIU will serve as a huge, from a psychological point of view, Chair, as a huge reminder to all of us of the need to make sure that as we do work in the department, we do work in line with the policies and procedures, but we do it above board. And I think, Chair, that investigation by itself is creating a lot of awareness, which is then going to assist our fraud prevention strategy that has been implemented and for which awareness has been created within the department. And this is very important, Chair. The second issue around monitoring and evaluation. Monitoring and evaluation continues to become a major issue. Whilst we are happy to say policies are in place, the reporting templates have been completed and implemented, the system has been developed, unfortunately this is just the beginning. The critical part of monitoring and evaluation is how do we on an ongoing basis make sure that we identify the challenges and the blockages that prevent performance. And this has been the challenge, Chair. You would see in the annual report comments by the Auditor General, particularly around the issues relating to evidence of demonstrating exactly where the performance has been, but more importantly around the targets and the criteria as to how objective are the targets, how specific and measurables are the targets. That remains a big issue, Chair, and it's an issue that we're really working on. About a month ago, we had a meeting looking at the first and the second reports for the new financial year around MME of saying, how do we make sure that these targets, they are not just hairy-fairy, but they are very specific, and we're able to make sure that we use the MME process to monitor performance. That's still a challenge, Chair, and we're hoping that at least over the next 12 to 18 months, we will be able to get a handle on this thing, because it's not just about putting reports, but it is
about being very clear that what we say we have done, there's a body of evidence that support what is it that we have done. And that also has been the feedback that we have received from the AG to say, all these things are wonderful, but we are battling to find the body of evidence to support the performance that has been allocated, indicated. I would like to head over to Mr. Vugela to proceed with the program on corporate services.
Thanks very much, DG, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members and colleagues. This area that I'm going to present is came into being as a result of us having realized that we're a department that's actually driven by the scarce skills, such that we wanted to build a skills base for ourselves and also for the other departments, if needs be. We have set ourselves targets in the skills areas wherein we implement in the area of learnership, artisans, trainees, internship, and young professionals, which entail the technical skills and the mentorship programs. Out of the targets that were set in the area of 269 young professionals, we were able to appoint 106 young professionals, and then three interns were translated into young professionals. Those were the ones who graduated in the technical spheres. We were able also to appoint 276 interns, and then 19 interns were able to be absorbed internally into positions that are vacant. 26 interns were also appointed externally, which means the market absorbed them. We were able also to set a target of 258 learners, out of which 74 were appointed. 13 learners were absorbed internally into positions that are approved, and 10 were appointed externally. We set us a target of 147 artisans trainees. We were able to appoint 29, and then one trainee has been absorbed, and young professionals who obtained registrations are as follows. In the town planning is one, property valuation is two, quantity surveying is one, architecture is one. These are learners who go through the proper professional registration through their various bodies. We do expose them to practical training and also assist them to ensure that they register. And then 64 learners completed the learnership program. One artisan trainee obtained a trade certificate, which means this is the area where we say we need to intervene, should not wait for external bodies to assist us, because we know we are a department that is driven by scarce skills. Thanks very much, Chair and DG.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I will be reporting on the performance and progress and strategic outcomes for the 2009-2010 financial year for Asset Investment Branch. Chair, on the first outcome, we've managed to basically finalize SLAs, and we've submitted to 40 user departments for signature. In terms of progress thus far, we've received 5, and we've requested Treasury intervention and DG and ministerial intervention to fast-track the signing with other departments. Yes. Chairperson, relevant to the custodian asset management plans, we've completed the custodian asset management plans more relevant to portfolio strategies for 11 user departments. We do experience a challenge here in that major departments did not submit the user asset management plan so that we could conclude portfolio strategies within the camp, and that includes the Department of Defense, Justice, and SAPS. But we are working with them to receive this relevant document. Chairperson, we have had the 10% reduction has been achieved. Where in terms of energy efficiency, and we've mainly concentrated in the Pretoria area in the previous financial year, as our largest consuming buildings are concentrated in this area. Shall we move on in terms of the state-owned buildings? We've identified 200 buildings at the outset of last year to be made accessible for people with disabilities. We're happy to indicate that we have 114 in construction, 38 buildings have been completed, and 22 in design and procurement at that particular stage. We've also completed options analysis in terms of best asset management practice for 16 user departments who have submitted their strategic requirements to Public Works, and then we basically assist them to obtain relevant budgetary budgets from National Treasury in terms of whether the outcome would be a lease, buy, build. In terms of the evaluation of state property, currently all values on the asset register are reflected at 1 rand, but in terms of where a new acquisition or disposal or a request is received for a valuation, we conclude a fully fledged valuation on a property prior to any property activity taking place. So in terms of rehabilitating state-owned buildings, we have rehabilitated the Civitas building, the State Library. We also concluded projects in Nearbank and Bluff, and the Portfolio Committee were privy to viewing those buildings not long ago. In terms of the immovable assets and the level of completeness, we aligned to the requirements as per GAAP and Auditor General requirements, we have had an improvement up to 75% of the properties on the asset register complies with minimum accounting requirements. Chair, thank you. I'll hand over to Ricky Samuel. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. The next part of the presentation deals with regional operations. As you know, we have 11 regional offices throughout the country. And in terms of the first issue, which is the transformation of the construction industry, we can report that 30% of the construction budget was spent on transformation of the industry by the 31st of March 2010. We have a dedicated program, which is a contracting incubator program, albeit that it's not fully implemented throughout all regional offices. There's been successes. We have 126 CIP contractors that have been registered on the system, and the expenditure on this was 66 million rand for the period. And then just briefly, some of the projects above 100 million rand executed in the regions. We have two projects that were executed in Johannesburg, as well as one for head office. With regards to the transformed property industry, our target for the year under review, or that we're reporting on, was a 10% increase year on year on the number of BE entities participating in the property industry, and out of the 3,028 leases, 686 was awarded to the entities amounting to just over 73 million rand, which was 31.47%. Then, specifically regarding statutory compliance and improved service delivery with regards to this aspect, 53 state-owned buildings complying with the Occupational Health and Safety Act and the NBRS by 31st of March to the target, and we have to report that this was achieved. If I could then move on to inner city regeneration, which is really aimed at improving service delivery to meet client expectations with regards to Public Works mandate. The client needs in 6 towns and cities in 3 provinces to be incorporated into IDPs by November 2009. in terms of this, the achievements, special research was conducted for the integrated development plans in Mthatha, Matatiela, Cape Town, and this was in addition to that for the IDP for Tshwane. Moving on to the efficiency and effectiveness in provision of services to clients, the target was that we wanted 60% of sites owned by the state as compared to 40% which is privately owned by the end of March 2010. We are happy to report that we have concluded the feasibility studies for Stats SA head office. There are a number of departments that we've also earmarked for or to occupy and to construct and occupy office accommodation in Salvoko. And at least six government precincts in three cities and three towns on the 31st of March, which is the third item. And we've entered into a memorandum of understanding with the city of Tshwane. We will be, or we in the process of finalizing a joint appointment between ourselves and the city of Tshwane for experts to assist us with the precinct planning for the precinct Salvoko, Church Square, Marabasta, and the Civitas precinct. And then, specifically with regards to the six development plans for three towns and three cities, in relation to some of the projects that we execute, there are 34 ramp, that's a repair and maintenance program projects that have been completed, three foreign projects completed. My colleagues already reported on Civitas and some of the other projects that we've completed. But one significant one is also phase one of Waterkloof Air Force Runway. Phase two is currently out to tender and at the evaluation and adjudication stages.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. Good morning, Chair, members, honourable members. As you would know, the Expand Public Works program aims to draw poor and unemployed people to the world of work, and in the process also to create assets in the form of, for instance, low-volume roads, as well as to provide services to the general community. And for the year under review, the detailed information is contained in the report. What we have done for the purpose of this presentation is just to give you a concise extract of some of the main features of the program and what we have achieved, and also where we have fallen short during the year and review. In terms of the youths participating, our target was to involve 6,000 youth. And we have achieved about 42% of that. Number of learners participating in the Kupili learnership, the target was to create 1,000 learnerships or get 1,000 learners participating, and we have created 511, which amounts to about 41%. In terms of the municipalities, our target was obviously we would like to get the entire 233 municipalities involved in the EPWP. But our target for the year under review was to provide technical support to 85 municipalities, and we have overperformed in that regard. We have been able to reach 130 municipalities, which amount to about 153%. And then finally, in terms of the work opportunities target, the overall work opportunities target was to create 550,000 work opportunities, and we have reported more than 625,000 work opportunities that amounted to 114% of the target. That's an overperformance in that regard. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Chairperson, honorable members. In relation to the improvement of performance and growth of the two industries that we are involved in, we set ourselves a target of comprehensive analysis of skills information in the industry. We are happy
to report that we've got all the information from all the universities except for one, starting from 2000 to 2009, on all the professions and the sub-disciplines. What we'll be doing this year is to analyze that information and identify the, except for the University of Johannesburg, we don't have, but otherwise all of them, we have the information. This year we have to analyze so that we can see what interventions are the students and what type of students are calling through in the universities, which ones are getting into the profession, what are the problems if they are not getting into the profession. But as a subset of that, if you look at number two, of that, we've developed a strategy which was approved by MINEC that looks at the whole skills pipeline. It will identify problems at high school level, it will identify problems at university, registration problems and all those. And then after that, we'll be identifying the interventions that need to be done by the department and the industry, because this is a part that cannot be done by the department alone. There are a number of role players. On the issue of effective legislative environment for the entities as well as the general legislation that we are responsible for, the members are aware of the review of the Expropriation Act as well as the development of the business case to establish AGRIMA as a legal personality. But over and above that, we have been working throughout the year with the State Law Review Commission to look at, they do this for all the government departments, to look at legislation that can be repealed as obsolete or legislation that they can recommend for amendment. Recently, we just received a comprehensive list and recommendations on our part of legislation which we are responding as a department, some of which are very old. We've got legislation that deals with individual property or individual town. That is really, really irrelevant, but we're engaging with them. They should be finalizing that process. It's in their hands, but we're working with them. On legislation that is relatively new, they likely more often than not to recommend that we don't change anything, but if there's anything, they would obviously recommend changes rather than repeal, but they're really obsolete pieces of legislation that they are also recommending. Last year, the members will remember that that was the first year of effective implementation of YAMA at provincial level. We targeted ourselves to do a number of guidelines because we have to continue guiding so that we can achieve uniformity and best practice. We've done all those guidelines that we have outlined there, but over and above that, we've worked very close with provinces, assisting them to get ready for implementation. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
At this point, I would like to just go through the financial performance and the audit reports with the CFO. And as I said in my opening statement, the CFO will also just take us through what was the basis for the qualification, how different was it from the previous year, but more importantly, what is the department currently doing around some of the audit findings. Over to you, sir.
Thanks, Chair. I will start first with the overall picture of the department in terms of spending for the year under review. Out of the budget allocation of 6 billion, we spent 5.6 billion, representing 94% of the allocated budget. We remained with unspent funds of 361 million, and I must say 121 million out of that amount has already been approved as a rollover. Year-on-year comparison shows that we underspent by 6%. The next slide shows our spending in terms of economic classification. Chair, in the previous year, we had unauthorized expenditure because we exceeded our budget under compensation of employees. We managed to correct the situation where we spent 99% on compensation and the under goods and services 99%. This was also increased by the previous authorized expenditure. Financial transactions, we spent 100%, transfers and subsidies, which include EPWP and the transfers that we made to the entities and also to the provinces on conditional funds, we spent 95%. Payment for capital assets, 86%. That's leaving us with the 94% that we spent against our budget. Chair, reported in our financial statements is fruitless and irregular expenditure, where we reported irregular expenditure of 30.8 million. The 5 million comes from the previous prior years. 27 million was reported as irregular for the year under review, and 15.6 million of that amount related to proper procurement processes not followed, where there would be instances where three quotations were not sourced, or where the open bidding process was not followed. The 11.7 million related to tax clearance certificates not attached, and most of these cases under tax clearance related largely to contracts that were concluded in the previous years. The department had an arrangement where if a contractor was registered with CIDB, it was a foregone conclusion that the tax certificate would be there, the VET certificates would be attached, the due diligence was done by CIDB, and the department relied on the accreditation that was done by CIDB, and that was an accepted process in the prior year. But for the year under review, the AG then went back to all those contracts. As long as there was a transaction that happened in the year under review, they went back to the procurement document to look at the process in which the procurement was done, and then they raised the issue to say, we did not request the tax clearance certificate. And we did not also report to Treasury those as being irregular. And that was the challenge under DPW. Going to the PMTE, for the first time, Chair, we managed to report in terms in line with GAAP, and that's what made us to turn around the adverse to a qualification. And there we are showing a revenue of 3.9 billion that we collected from our operations, with operating expenditure of 3.9, leaving us with a deficit of 57 million. The transition from modified cash basis of accounting to GAAP obviously came with a few challenges, because in some of the calculations that we had to do, we needed a system that can help us to even out and comply. We closed the year with a bank overdraft of 1.6 billion, with almost 70% of the balance relating to current year underwriting. The PMTE also reported fruitless and irregular expenditure. Fruitless expenditure of 392,000. This related to cases from our Joburg region, where clients would vacate premises without informing the department, and we remain obligated to the landlords to pay off the balance of the lease. We also had a regular expenditure of 264 million arising from 4.2 million no proper authorization, where perhaps in terms of the delegations of the department, if an amount above 1 million was supposed to be authorized by a deputy director, it was authorized by an assistant director. Those were the issues with regard to proper authorization. The bulk was no clearance certificate where the CIDB arrangement was in place. No supporting documents where some of the documents required by the AG could not be traced, relating to all projects, and procurement processes not followed, amounting to 69 million. Chair, on that, let me take you through the audit report itself. We received a qualification under DPW. The qualification was based on immovable asset register and on irregular expenditure. Just to make a year-on-year comparison, in the previous year, we were qualified on immovable asset register, and the movable asset register, including the contingency liabilities that we reported and the fast system that we had procured. For this year, we are qualified on immovable asset register, which was coming from the previous year, and the irregular expenditure is a new item that was brought onto our qualification this year. We also had an emphasis of META, fruitless and wasteful expenditure, which I reported to be coming from the leases that were the obligations that we had to fulfill with the landlord. Just to touch on progress made to date with immovable assets, that the issues that were raised by the AG citing incompleteness in terms of our register included, amongst other things, the fact that title deeds were not included in on some of the fields, the name of the properties. Besides the fact that there was no proper reconciliation with other systems such as the deed registration, the pub land, and also the municipal valuation, we went ahead after receiving this qualification to review the entire asset register, extract those areas where there were deficiencies in terms of open fields, and we continuously engaged the region to update the information, get some of the information from the deed registration to ensure that we plug in all the empty fields that were not recorded in our asset register. We also proceeded to increase capacity within the regions. We are currently, I think, in the process of employing almost 52 people who are going to assist us in updating, taking this process forward. Chair, this is an ongoing exercise. There is significant process that has been done. The numbers of properties extracted were 33972. We investigated 18,029, almost 54% properties, and updated them on the asset register. There is a task team also that is working on the issues raised, which also touches on the vesting cited by the AG, to say as long as the vesting is not completed, we cannot talk about a complete asset register. There is a task team that has been formed, including the ministerial task team that is working on the vesting issues. And these task teams include the Office of the Accountant General and the Office of the Auditor General. And they also meet with the minister to collectively assist in expediting the vesting process that has been pending for many years. We also developed asset register guidelines to ensure that there is a process that can inform how the asset register can achieve completeness. Chair, we've gone further to engage provinces like Eastern Cape and Western Cape. We had a focus meeting with them because they managed to get a clean audit on immovable assets and looked at their approach and looked at how they managed to package the issues such that the AG can also understand. We are using that approach to try and clean up our register and engaging with them and getting capacity to ensure that we can also at least arrive at a point of clear completeness. We are also going to reconcile our register against the municipality's evaluation rules. We are going to reconcile our asset register against the deed and the pub land. Using those three, we should be able to engage the AG more convincingly, because they also use this kind of source for them to say our asset register is incomplete. Chair, on the PMTE, we received a qualification. We managed to change the adverse, even though the qualification is not the best, but adverse was the worst report that we could report as a department. The basis of qualification was on revenue and receivable related parties, expenditure and payable, and irregular expenditure. We also received an emphasis of matter on the restatement of corresponding figures. Chair, on the emphasis of matter, it was a matter that was beyond our control, because when we were moving from cash basis to accrual, we had to restate the corresponding figures for us to be able to compare apples with apples. But then on the qualification issue, the issue of revenue and receivables, it was because the reconciliations that we were doing previously would balance the total on the our past report, but the individual data did not reconcile. And the exercise that we did, that we reported as 90%, it is that reconciliation between the individual data. And that exercise has enabled us to start engaging client departments to pay whatever is outstanding. Expenditure from cash basis of accounting to GAAP, and also because of the manual systems that we are currently using. Going to the related parties, this is a matter that would have definitely be aligned to the issue of the revenue, because if the revenue and receivables are considered not to be disclosed properly, it would affect the reliability in terms of what we disclose under related parties. Just to give an example of related parties, in terms of our TMTE, we are talking about the National Department of Public Works, which is also a related party to the TMTE, and other national departments and public entities reporting to the national department, because they are subjected to common control. We have to try and resolve this. One, we are cleaning the receivables and our debtors and doing reconciliation. But again, what is key is for us to get a system that can then begin to give us more credible information in terms of what we are disclosing. I can safely say we have done with the specifications. Because for any acquisition of a system, we need to engage Treasury. This is the process that has unfolded. We've engaged CETA in terms of what we have to do. The only remaining issue is to obtain approval and be able to acquire the system. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Are we done?
Thank you.
What is there that you didn't tell us, that you wish us to know?
Sir, thank you very much. I think it's less about what is it that we didn't tell you, Chair, but for me, the critical concerns are as follows. The issue of irregular expenditure is a significant factor, particularly if you look at the content where the basis for the irregular expenditure was either documents were not there for the agency review, or that there was no proper authorization, or that procurement processes were not followed. This remains a significant issue of concern for us. We were at the Mthatha regional office yesterday, and the same issue was again on the agenda about irregular expenditure. And Chair, it really, this issue falls into two categories. One, it is relating to the processes and systems which we are improving, but the other part has to do with human behavior, which is the difficult and the challenging part about people not doing what they ought to be doing. The other area, Chair, of concern is the issue of the immovable asset register, the completeness thereof, and the second part is the valuation of the properties. I am worried about this, Chair, that it's going to continue to become a perennial problem for the department. The Interministerial Committee the Minister is currently convening the Interministerial Committee. We were meant to have it today, but we have moved it because of this meeting, and we are expecting a report from the Office of the Accountant General about the technical side, that the report from the Technical Working Group to try and resolve the issues of the immovable assets. But the second part, Chair, relating to that is the issue of the valuation of the properties, which is going to become a significant problem because, Chair, it says that we must value all the properties in that register, which is a huge exercise. It's a costly exercise, and we need to debate very openly with the AG as well as with the Office of the Accountant General as to when we have done that, what would be the objective? Once we have gotten to understand what is the market value of the Union Building, what then do we do with it? And this is leads me to the next area, Chair, of the issues of accounting standards that are very important.
evaluation becomes important. But if the evaluation of the properties is for the disposal of properties to other government agencies, again, the issue of evaluation becomes questionable as to the relevancy thereof. The other issues, Chair, that the CFO has raised is heavily to do with other accounting statements like fair market valuation of receivables. Given the skills within the department and the poor systems that we have, it's going to take us a while before we get all of those correct. And it is important that we raise these issues, Chair, and so that the honourable members are aware that some of these challenges are going to remain with us at least for the next 2 or 3 years. Thank you.
Thank you very much, DJ. Thank you very much. I want to give members to start engaging with the report and making comments, asking questions, or raising any matter. DJ, you were not here last year when we really going into details of the department, in terms of trying to understand that, you know, accounting is a daily exercise, not an annual one. And to keep good records is part of our duty, it's part of our day-to-day activity. And the issues that you're talking about of human error, human, basically corruption, you know, we should avoid them, those type of situations. We've said all these things. And we are sure that when you come back this year, we'll all be smiling. Because we all these things are achievable. We believe that we have no reason to doubt. And I think there is progress made, obviously. We can't take away that. I mean, that from adverse to qualification, it's progress made, you see. But we said that we insisted that what makes us not achieve a clean audit. Okay, that's one thing. But not for its sake. I mean, because that gives us an assurance that at least there is still governance and people take what they do very seriously. And we even said, if there are issues that are difficult, that you foresee that you might encounter problems in the future, state them so that we find together, because we're willing to also steady our hands and find solutions. Not to interfere, but just to say how can we assist. And asset registration was one of them, just to give an example. Irregular expenditure, we did not even anticipate that we'll have that problem again. You see, and we are happy that when it comes to movable assets, you've done tremendous work. Congratulations on that. But we've also noted that immovable assets comes a long way. It didn't start last year. There was a time that you got a treasury exemption on this matter because it was a difficult matter. Here we are again on the same issue. And you know, as a father, I've got daughters, you see. And I've got friends who've got daughters. We discuss to say, what do you do when you send your daughter to school, she comes back, she's pregnant. You see, you can't chase her out of the house if they go away. Your daughter still, you see. You've got to say, please, my daughter, you know, you went to school, blah, blah, blah. Leave the baby with us and go back to school. The following day, she comes back, she's pregnant again. Kathy, what do you do as a mother? I'm not saying you're pregnant. I'm just a repetition of the same mistake. I don't know what to say. I just look at you. So, okay, my baby. Next time, next year, come back. Better. So on. Remember, That's yours. I leave those engagements to you. Brother Eddie? Yes.
The report in terms of reporting it is improved a lot, but the content is still dissatisfactory. The issue of monitoring and evaluation, the issue of, for example, asset registration. I mean, indeed you like to know the market value of all the assets also, because were they going to dispose of human within the arena of government? I mean, if you're still keeping them within the arena, we'd like to know the value so that when you issue leases and rentals, you should know these properties were so much and market value. And that will determine per square meter how much you charge for leasing or renting. So I don't know how we can lease our property without knowing what value is. The value determines the value of the lease or the rental. And also, some of the properties we may not need to keep, we might need to dispose of rather than get them wasted, like in the township where you've got post offices for the 5 years, they've been not operating, and they are there. They ultimately they get vandalized, people shall take flats, dogs, dolphins, just everything, and it becomes a ghost town in itself. So there's no one-way solution. You can't say where they're going to dispose. It will depend on circumstances. But I would say that indeed the value is important. The second point on measure monitoring and evaluation, I mean, take the issue of skills development. We raised this in the past. You get a report that says we're promoting skills. And when you check the financial report, there's no way where we're issuing bursaries and to engineers, for example. And you get surprised, how are we supporting skills if there are no money allocated for those people to go to university? And is that way, I mean, you can measure whether this statement is true. You could assume that it isn't true. It's just a statement for the sake of reporting, because there is actually no money allocated. I just want to say about skills. When you say technical skills, you need to say technicians or engineers, because those are two different things. But for now, I would imagine we're not happy, because if we're producing one architect, according to the report, one quantity surveyor. And in construction, you need civil engineers who does bulk supply of water, bulk supply of sewer systems, and so on. And those are not there. So, indeed, in skills development for the people of corporate services, we definitely, because in a skills that they refute the economic policy, they said we need to produce 1,000 skills for the economy to grow according to the needed jobs. And for now, South Africa is producing only generally 500, which is half of the aspired skills that the engineers that we need. So I would say on this issue of engineers, we need to work harder, because for now, to be honest, it is negligible. And we can't develop without engineers. The last one is on the report about paying contractors. If you really want to support previously disadvantaged, would like to hear a report that says last year this percentage of our failures and we have improved because this year we pay them. You see, if you don't pay people, I know with my own salary, if it doesn't come in at the stipulated date, I've got debit orders then stop orders. If they don't go through, first of all, the bank charges me. And I've got to pay that money because the money was not available. Secondly, these days you get blacklisted just for being overdrawn on your account. You get blacklisted. So you could be killing the very people you're saying you want to promote just by not paying them at the end of the month. Because they can't go to their workers and say, look on this tar road, I can't pay this month, I'm still waiting for my own salary. Workers don't understand that. They've got families to feed. when they go home, their wives will be up in arms wanting money and suspecting that it has been used somewhere with girlfriends. So I'm saying, work hard on this thing, because if you don't, you'll be destroying the very same previously disadvantaged people. The advantage will be in the Marie and Robert of this one, because they've got the results. They can pay and wait. Whether you take 3 months, they don't care. They can wait. But this guy who lives from who you're trying to promote, you don't have reserves. You really kill them. And ultimately, their report will say, bad performance, they didn't deliver on time, and we grade them low, and we are responsible for that, and we don't take responsibility. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much. Let's do this. Let's just take some general comments and responses to what Danny is saying, and then we take a 10-minute tea break, tea outside, come back here and fully engage. Can we just do that, DJ?
I'd like to take the comments from the Honourable Member at two levels. One, to agree with the Honourable Member that we most certainly can do more, particularly around skills development. And the issue there is to really be more aggressive on our part as a department in terms of the targets we've set for ourselves. Because indeed those targets are quite low. We had set ourselves a target of 270 for young professionals, 250 and 258 for interns and learners. And given the skill shortages, we can do more. But more importantly is also to recognize that our ability to take on learnerships and interns is also influenced by our own capacity issues. In terms of the number of professionals within the department. And again, if I use our regional visit to Mthatha, for example, Chair, where the region is raising the issue of saying we do not have a project manager, it would be very difficult to appoint interns in that region where you don't have a project manager who will then become the mentor and making sure that there's adequate skills transferred to those individuals. So it is a reality, and some of these realities, for example, in some of the rural areas of our country, is the ability to attract the correct skills to those areas. The issue of the asset register, yes, indeed, I again agree with the Honourable Member that it becomes important to say what are we going to do with the value, and if the value is the basis for determining rentals, we are in agreement that yes, there is a need for that. But where we worry is where the buildings in question, there is no economic transaction that is going to take place. But yes, as far as the buildings we're involved for leasing purposes, yes, it is important for us, and we're using some of the market values, the road reports, etc., to determine the appropriateness of rental. The last issue, which is the paying of service providers, it is an important issue, Chair. I continue to take a lot of calls from service providers who are complaining about the issues of them not being paid. And some of these issues, Chair, have as a result of various factors. One major factor is just the communication between ourselves within the department, as well as the communication between various parts of the department and the service provider. And the CFO here will know of one particular case that has been going on for years, and at the core of it is just the fact that it just has been very bad communication. And it is a challenge, Chair, because again, it is a human element thing. It is easy for officials to send back a contractor because he does not have all the documents. But it is more difficult to get people to have a solutions orientation towards wanting to assist service providers and saying, let me see what pieces of documents we have. Let me see what is it that you don't have. Let me give you a comprehensive solution of saying, these are the documents you need, and this is where you can get the documents, and when you come back, this is how we're going to move forward.
and at times the absence of that element of patience with our people is the issue that causes a huge amount of frustration. I know for a fact that the CFO has been involved in a number of these areas to try and alleviate the issues relating to payments. But a further issue, Chair, is also has to do with the ability of some of our emerging contractors, for example, of them not being administratively strong and not having all their pieces of information, which then becomes a frustration because our processes need those pieces of information for us to move on. And if they themselves don't have all their ducks in a row, it becomes very difficult at times for us. But we're engaging with them on a daily basis. And I agree that it would be important for us to do that comparative analysis of saying, how have we done relative to the previous years? And I think the CFO will put that report together and we can submit it to the committee. Thank you.
Thank you, DG. Let's say that we need just to be clear on the issues that you raised about the valuation of property and priorities, those that need to be done in line with what Honorable Kikan is saying, so that we don't lose that matter. And then secondly, this issue of contractors, you see. We don't want to return back to the old complaints because clearly they are reduced with your Operation Rea Patala campaign. They are reduced, but the problem is not gone. The asset registration issue, I'm sure we're going to continue to discuss that even in the absence of Pratani here. You see, we also took the liberty to discuss this matter at some point with the Office of the Auditor General. We invited to our portfolio committee as well the National Treasury on the matter. They don't seem to be convinced that we are going to achieve what we want to achieve at the pace that we're going. In other words, they say this matter is beyond the Department of Public Works. Yes, it's not, yeah. And one suggestion that came from that process was that the Treasury said that we might wish to consider some special purpose vehicle to deal just with this matter. I'm not sure if there was like willingness to look into funding for this process because we have raised a political problem to say that how can a state just deal with its liabilities and not its asset base? It's a problem. Also taking it further to say, 16 years now into our new democracy, we cannot justifiably say to the next generation that we don't know the profile of our assets. See, we had problems before of homelands or this, that and the other. But this thing is not only by default. It's also by design. We have raised in the previous meetings that we have visited provinces and there are a lot of criminals who have hijacked properties of government for their own businesses, whatever they do. And we seem to be very casual in dealing with these matters. Let me raise this matter again. We go to Gauteng and the NEC says to us as the portfolio committee, we know the flats that belong to government and buildings here. Some senior officials have actually left their own houses. They are renting them out. They live here and they pay very small rentals for this. And secondly, there are those that are clearly taken over by criminals who are letting them out and so on. When we come clearer, they advise us in no uncertain terms that we must get additional bodyguards. You see, we can't put a full stop there. That means law enforcement must take place, public works nationally must be able to go to the MEC in Gauteng and others and say, how big is this problem, and find some solution to deal with this problem. We can't be held to ransom like that all the time. So I'm just raising some of these matters to say that some of the problems are not necessarily by default here, they are by design. And I'm putting just a full stop there for the purpose of now. Let's have a 15 minutes tea break. We'll be back by 11:15 to continue the discussion.
Mm-hmm.